On this week's show, we'll get an update on the Bonner and Burroughs scandal that's rocking the Texas House, including a resignation, and we'll hear about how left-wing radicals are working their way into the Texas judiciary. In our interview, we're joined by Teresa Beckmeyer of Gun Owners of America with some thoughts on the fight against gun grabbers here in Texas, and we'll close with a commentary from Empower Texans CEO on what it means to fight faithfully. Welcome to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 Studios in Austin, Texas. You can find us on the internet, www.texasscorecard.com. Also, if you're listening to us on the old radio, we also have a podcast. The show comes out as a podcast. You can go on to iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, basically all your favorite podcasting platforms, and ensure that you never miss an episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. And you wouldn't want to miss an episode of the show because there's so much going on in Texas politics and local government that you as a taxpayer need to know about. And I've got Destin Sinsky, our Capitol correspondent here. Huge developments going on seemingly every week.
Yeah.
Coming from this big story involving the scandal involving Texas House Speaker Dennis Bonin, Dustin Burroughs, the chairman of the Republican caucus in the Texas House of Representatives, and our own Empire Texan CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan. Mm-hmm. Lots of developments there. Let's go into the big thing this week, Burroughs stepping down.
Right, yeah. So actually the former Texas House Republican Caucus Chairman, Representative Dustin Burroughs, Republican out of Lubbock, who chairs the Republican Caucus, stepping down from that position, not resigning from his post as state rep.
Has not resigned his seat, but resigned his position as caucus chair.
Correct.
This on the wake, he basically championed a rule in the caucus that said, hey, Republicans, you can't campaign against other Republicans.
Yeah, we're all on the same team. You know, this is a big deal.
Hashtag unity kind of thing.
Right.
Questionable sort of deal. Champions that. First guy to break the rule, as far as we know.
Yeah.
And in a big way.
At least publicly.
As part of a illicit quid pro quo offer to Michael Quinn Sullivan about, everybody knows the story at this point. If you don't, go to TexasScorecard.com. Lots there on that. You can get the background. But he's resigning from the post, and there's a lot of fallout to that.
Yeah, I think this is basically the equivalent of like the starting quarterback on a football team who has made a list of players he thinks ought to be traded off to another organization, right? And then the team finds out about it, and they're like, hey, no, we don't want to play for this guy.
We don't want to catch passes from this guy.
And then, chiefly on the list is the former starter, right? You know, so that's kind of a funny development.
I mentioned Tan Parker, who was former GOP caucus chair, one of the members targeted on
that.
That's
right. So I think, a little bit of context over the past week or so, you start to see some of these county executive committees, these Republican Party groups across the state passing resolutions demanding either answers or resignations outright. This kind of is the boil over of those developments, which have continued to go on into this week. We've seen, three additional county executive committees just in the past 48 hours pass resolutions. So the list of organizations across the state calling for something to be done for the GOP to address this crisis now is continuing to grow.
Yeah, and so Burroughs stepping down, how is it going to work? His vice chair now elevated to caucus chair, and then there's a whole voting.
Right, so immediately following his resignation, by the way, a letter from the remaining members of that board, if you will. They're the ones that submit this letter saying we've accepted the resignation, and it's chiefly signed by Stephanie Click, who was vice chair and now interim chairman. And she says that they will, over the course of the next month or so, have an election to fill what is now her former vacancy, or what is her vacancy and former position at vice chair.
Okay.
So that's kind of where we are now.
And so the caucus having to resolve this issue in the next 30 days. They're scheduled to meet sometime in October.
Correct.
So they may meet physically. They may vote electronically. Whatever it is, there's mm-hmm. definitely this campaign on to say, you know, who's going to be in charge of this caucus in the legislature, and you know, who's going to be leading the charge for Republican policies in the Texas House of Representatives.
Right, right. And then the other development is we still haven't heard anything from Bonin on this, you know, on the same matter, more or less. He did issue a comment saying, hey, you know, Burroughs is a friend of mine. I've appreciated his leadership for our party. But beyond that,
spokesman writes out a statement.
Right, right.
A statement.
But beyond that,
he himself is still more or less hiding from
right.
the attention.
And so I think other questions that have been raised is, hey, you know, what are we going to do if, you know, more resignations
if
come?
If he resigns as Speaker, which is even more legally significant.
Right.
And there's been an interesting controversy. So he has a Democrat, Joe Moody, as his Speaker pro tem.
That's right.
And they're saying, okay, is this guy going to become the Speaker?
Well, and so I think clarity in the past week or so has unfolded as we've learned in the rules that, you know, the Speaker pro tem serves at the pleasure of the Speaker. And so he could assign a yeah. new one, a Republican, with, you know, the, you know, the bat of an eyelash, right? He just decides yeah, he's so going
to
do it.
I think it's, he sends a letter to the clerk and says, hey, I want to replace this Democrat as my Speaker pro tem. Well, he just does that.
Yep.
And then there would be a different guy who would take over the interim duties if he were to resign. So it's all on him. It's
that's
all
right.
back on him, which is you know, a problem that he created. Well, I think that's a good wrap up of the things that have gone on
yeah.
This
more
week.
More developments
and,
next week.
And I'm sure there will be more next week. Thanks for your reporting on it, Dustin.
Of course.
Now let's talk to Jordan Clements, intern extraordinaire here with Empower Texans. Jordan, you're up with a really interesting commentary about a couple of Texas Republican judges who, you know, you expect Republican judges to be doing Republican, maybe conservative things, pushing a very far left agenda in some of their activities off the bench.
While I was very surprised about this particular instance, one of the first things I learned when I became involved with Young Conservatives of Texas last year is that Texas is really run by a coalition of moderate to left-wing Republicans, or RINOs, and liberal Democrats. And the fact that these two Republican judges are pushing the notion that children should be able to get gender reassignment surgery and abortions without parental consent is just more proof that the left really runs the state of Texas.
Yeah, I mean, we have a serious problem here and in the judiciary and other branches of government. So let's tell us who the judges are. And certainly that's some pretty wild stuff. So let's unpack what they're actually doing.
Of course. So the two justices in question are former Chief Justice Wallace Jefferson and current Justice Deborah Lehrman, both from the Supreme Court.
Texas Supreme Court.
Texas Supreme Court, yes. Both of these individuals are associated with an organization called the American Law Institute, which are most known for publishing these things called restatements of the law, which are supposed to be simplified but not necessarily dumbed down restatements of what the law is supposed to
be. Yeah, you know, so I'm an attorney. I went to law school. In law school, I learned about these restatements. It's, you don't use them a lot, but you learn about them. And they basically say, look, this is just going to tell you what the court cases say out there. Without having to go read the cases, here's kind of what the cases say generally. But there's a lot of criticism that that isn't really what it's about anymore.
Exactly. Justice Scalia, who was once a frequent citer of these restatements, actually called them out in one of his dissents, stating that the restatements of the law have gone from restating what the law says to pushing their agenda. And that's
what's alleged to be happening here with Jefferson and Lehrman. So tell us a little bit about what they're specifically calling for in this latest restatement.
In this latest restatement, which Deborah Lehrman is one of like the advisors on the restatement, listed as one of like the main contributors, and with Wallace Jefferson being the treasurer, what the restatement essentially is saying is that children have their own bodily autonomy, meaning that ultimately parents have no right to withhold consent, or in fact children don't need consent if a child wants to seek an abortion or a gender reassignment surgery.
Yeah, and so you're basically empowering these activists to do these procedures on children absent parental consent. Basically, these guys saying this is the law. The amazing thing, do they cite cases to support that?
No, in fact, the restatement itself stated the only justification for it was a BuzzFeed article.
Which is insane.
They don't
totally,
even
write it. Totally crazy stuff. Folks, it's a really eye-opening thing about the Republican judges we have in the state, at least some of them. Something really to look into. Folks ought to check out Jordan Clement's article up at TexasScorecard.com. Thanks, Jordan.
All right, thank you.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At TexasScorecard.com or EmpowerTexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at EmpowerTexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's my pleasure to have on this week Teresa Beckmeyer with Gun Owners of America, Texas. Thanks for joining us, Teresa.
Well, thanks for having me.
We had your colleague Rachel Malone on at the beginning of the legislative session. Now, you've recently joined the team there with Gun Owners of America, and wanted to kind of go through and talk about not just the ways we're defending Second Amendment rights, defending gun rights here in Texas, but also some things that we can do positively. But the big thing in the news, the governor is out with this Texas Safety Commission, putting a radical anti-gun group on there. And you've kind of had an outcry over that over the last week or so. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with that.
Yes. After the shootings in El Paso, there was a lot of talk about red flag laws and such coming from both sides right after it. And then the narrative has sort of changed, and they've gone into talking about domestic terrorism threats. And with that came the governor coming out and saying that he was going to have these roundtables, that he was going to appoint people to roundtables to discuss the domestic terrorism threat. Monday, he came out with his list of who would be on the first roundtable, and there was a group on there called Texas Gun Sense. Now, if you just read that title, it sounds like it's an okay group, but it's not. They are anti-gun. There was not any other group on the roundtable that was pro-gun.
Wow.
So that has caused a huge outcry.
So basically, they've brought this group in that's a radical anti-gun rights group into a discussion on safety, and you don't have any voice counterbalancing that, saying, hey, wait a second, you know, that's like the John Lott thing, more guns equal less crime, you know, we are safer whenever we can protect ourselves. These common sense things that you and I all understand, but there's no voice there. That's pretty concerning.
Yes, Gun Owners of America, once the list came out, we put out a post on that Tuesday asking people to contact the governor's office. And I guess, I know that the post that we put up had, last time I looked, it had over 685 shares asking people to contact the governor's office, and people must have done it because he's made a correction to the table. He actually added Mike Cox of the Texas State Rifle Association to serve on the roundtable.
Okay, so now there is a group there, but not, yeah, you know, necessarily as strong of a group as a group like Gun Owners of America. Now let's talk a little bit about the concern there, because, you know, the governor had some similar sort of roundtable things last summer where they were discussing issues related to shootings and stuff like that. And they came out of it with proposals and concepts around red flag laws. And people, you know, are selling that. I hear it a lot of discussion out of Washington about red flag laws. These are really dangerous to individual gun rights.
Yes, they are. These red flag laws, what the problem is with those is they take away your due process. They just had a case in Florida. I just saw an article where a man there, he had a name, the same name as another person that had mental issues. And because he had the same name, they came to his house and took his guns away. It was a case of mistaken identity, but Florida has red flag laws. So it is very dangerous. You can have a neighbor that's upset with you, and they can turn you in as that you're a threat, and that can trigger these red flags. And then you can have the possibility of your guns being taken away without you being able to go to court first.
Yeah,
very dangerous.
The proposal when Governor Abbott last summer came out and said, well, I'm interested in, and it was one of these kind of double-sided statements. Oh, well, I'm interested in red flag laws, but only if they protect due process rights. And kind of you and I look at it and go, well, that's the whole point, is to violate people's due process rights. Because there's any number of ways you could, involuntarily commit somebody to a mental institution if they're, violent or something. Target the person who's at risk, not the guns, which are really just tools. But the they came out with this, and the Democrats came out and said, oh, well, this is our bill. This is our bill from last session. This is great. The governor's on board with our bill. And the bill, I mean, it was crazy stuff. This would have allowed law enforcement just to come in on a accusation and seize firearms without a hearing, without you being present for the hearing, without any opportunity to have a lawyer there. And then you're trying to claw your rights back against the institutions of the state. We see this happen. I mean, we've been covering it on the show over the last month or so with CPS cases. And you're fighting a losing battle whenever these kind of things happen.
Yes, you are. And what you have to realize, too, is that all your property, your guns, have already been seized, and they've been taken away from you. And sometimes trying to get your property back, it's almost impossible to get that property back once it's been taken away, even though, they can clear your name and all that. But getting your property back, that's another story. So, I don't know if people remember, but last summer, when they were coming out real hot and heavy with the red flag law lingo and all that, there was such a huge pushback from the public that the governor almost changed his position overnight.
Sure.
Was pro-gun, red flag law, and then overnight it was no.
Well, and it was one of those things where even the statement they put out, they said, well, okay, we're interested in red flag laws, but only if it protects people's rights. And I'm looking at it going, I think he's going to back down from this because, you can't do that. I mean, that's not the whole point.
Well, what's concerning about what I'm seeing right now is, okay, so we had that last summer. He's all about the red flag laws. And then we come out with the El Paso shootings. We come out again with a cry for red flag laws. There were Republicans also on that bandwagon. Then they figured out, oh, this isn't good. So now we have changed the narrative again, and we're going with domestic terrorism. So government has a way of, they will have an agenda, but when they see it's not playing well in the public, it sort of goes underground, or they rebrand it to something that sounds safer, or that it's going to help you. So that is the concern about these roundtables. And when we saw Monday what came out, not only did they have Texas Gun Sense on this roundtable, and let me tell you, Texas Gun Sense walks lockstep with another group called Moms Demand Action.
Right.
And if anybody has been to the Capitol, Moms Demand Action are the women that walk around with the red shirts on, and they show up in mass against good gun bills. Also on this roundtable are representatives from Facebook, Google, and Twitter. So the roundtable that had started shaping up, it just was not looking good for our rights.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to keep an eye on it. I mean, obviously, these meetings will be taking place, and the important thing is to keep an eye on them and then take action and tell the, elected officials, the governor, what we think of what's being said there. I mean, that's, we've already seen this be successful even in small doses. So there's always opportunities to get better results out of even bad situations. I wanted to change subjects a little bit and talk about something. You know, I see polling out there. There was a poll out the other day on gun rights stuff. And the problem with this is you ask the question one way, you get one answer. You ask it a different way, you get a different answer. But lots of support for expanding background checks. And it seems like this kind of easy, you know, low-hanging, oh, that's not that controversial thing to do. But I'm sure GOA has a voice on this saying, whoa, 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 wait a second. You're really talking about regulating private transfers, the gifting of guns. You give your child a gun for Christmas, yeah. You know. Tell us a little bit about that, what that really means, because I think people maybe aren't really very well educated on it.
But the process is right now, there is a background check in place to where if you go in and you purchase a firearm, you are going to go through the federal database. They are checking you to see if you have it, if you've had felonies, if you have any other kind of things showing up that would prohibit you from owning a firearm. So we already have a background process in place. What they're talking about now is something they call it universal background checks. That means that if you have a gun that's your private personal property, you cannot go sell that gun to your neighbor in a private transaction. That would be against the law, because at that point, that neighbor would have to go through a background check. You can't gift a gun, like you said, to a child or to your child. It's just really an invasion of your privacy. It's a loss of your private property rights. It's just wrong. And for them to be, you know, putting it out, people don't realize, I think a lot of people don't realize that we already have this background process in place.
We're
focusing on the wrong thing. It's not the gun that's causing the problem here. It is bad characters doing bad things.
That's exactly
right. And these people that are doing these things, they are going to get a weapon, and they are not going to go through a background check, even if that is the law.
And if somebody's intent on killing somebody, they can shoot them, they can stab them, they can run them over with a car, they can drop a ton of bricks on them. I mean, there's no way to make the world safe from evil. Let me switch subjects here. You know, we're talking about a couple of things that, you know, GOA and gun groups and Second Amendment rights activists are fighting against. Tell us a little bit about some of this effort you've been pushing and working with to promote gun rights here at the local level in Texas.
Yes. What I've been doing, I've been facilitating people that have come to me with questions. About a month ago, we had a Second Amendment Sanctuary County Resolution passed in Presidio County. That resolution was completely led by citizens in that county. And what it is, they have put forth a resolution in their county saying, with the full support of their local sheriff and their commissioners, saying that if the federal government or the state government passes laws that are going to infringe upon our gun rights, you know, take them up or whatever, that county will not recognize those laws.
Right, and they recognize the Constitution, not some unconstitutional, mandate.
Yes, there's been another one passed in Hudspeth County. Actually, they were the first one. They had done it back in March, and nobody really realized it. Since that time, we've had a lot of counties wanting to do this. I've sort of been talking to the counties. Like I said, this is completely citizen-led. This is not a GOA initiative. We're not, saying go do this. This is a citizen-led thing. There's been over 40 counties across the state that are looking into doing this for their counties. One important thing to notice, New Mexico, which had a law passed last session to where it prohibited the sale of guns between private individuals, once that happened, 26 of their 33 states became sanctuary, 2A sanctuary counties.
Wow. And so you have local officials, local communities stepping up to say, hey, we're going to protect our constitutional rights. We're not going to let some mandate from you know, Austin or Santa Fe in that context interfere, or Washington interfere with the rights of our citizens. Well, that's all the time. I think I'm kind of running out of time here on the interview. But before we go, tell folks how they can connect with you and with Gun Owners of America, the Texas chapter in particular, and if they want to get involved in the activism that y'all are doing.
Yeah, you can find Gun Owners on the internet at gunowners.org. We're on Facebook, it's Gun Owners of America. And if you're on Twitter, it's at Gun Owners.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, Teresa. Appreciate the good work you're doing. Keep it up. Gunowners.org. Everybody go check it out. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hi, this is Kerry Cheshire with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Your state lawmaker probably campaigned as a conservative, as someone who would go to Austin to cut spending and limit government. But did he keep that promise? At index.empowertexans.com, you can see how your lawmaker voted on the major issues of the legislative session. Things like property tax relief, the state budget, and regulatory reform. You can also view his score on the Fiscal Responsibility Index and decide if he needs a pat on the back, a wag of the finger, or perhaps a permanent vacation from public service. The Fiscal Responsibility Index is the premier tool for taxpayers to hold their lawmakers accountable. Check us out today at index.empowertexans.com.
Sometimes in life we find ourselves in a fight. Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan explains what it means to fight faithfully in this week's commentary.
Too often we hear and even repeat the phrase victory or death and assume we'll achieve the former rather than the latter. With a Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. When most of us hear the name Magdala, if we think of anything, we might possibly connect it with the New Testament's Mary Magdalene. But the city itself tells us about faithfulness in the face of defeat. During the last century BC and the first century AD, Jews chafed under Roman rule. Sure, some people made off pretty well working with the Romans, but many yearned for the kind of self-governing independence that their people had been promised, but then squandered by their ancestors in the desire for a king. Like swarming gnats, a couple minor would-be insurrectionists had been crushed by the Romans over the years. By the latter half of the first century AD, frustration was hitting a fever pitch. The result was the Great Revolt. The region around the Sea of Galilee was a hotbed of activity for the zealot rebels, those Jews who wanted to overthrow the Romans. Magdala was a fishing village of little note, except as a gathering place for the Jewish rebels. We know this because it was also the hometown to the Jewish leader known to us as the Roman historian Josephus Flavius. In 67 BC, the Romans laid siege to Magdala. Some inhabitants fled after it fell, but most were murdered by the Romans. For Texans, think of a massacre like Goliad or the Alamo. But probably worse. The archaeological ruins uncovered in recent years have found city streets still barricaded against the coming Roman forces. Here's the thing. Hastily piled stones, wagons, and refuse were never going to stop the Romans. It did, however, send a signal that this revolt wasn't going to be put down easily. The Romans learned at Magdala that the zeal of the Jewish rebels would be costly for all involved. The Romans did finally, several years later, crush the revolt. Towns like Magdala faded from history, literally wiped from the earth by the might of the Roman war machine. We remember the Alamo and Goliad because we ultimately won. Would either place be remembered if the Texas Revolution had failed? Probably not. The people of Magdala were just as heroic as the men at the Alamo. So, for us, Magdala is a reminder that no matter how noble the cause, losing is always a real possibility. We fight not knowing if we'll win, but if we feel so called, we must fight nonetheless, and fight zealously. Our reward may be victory, the cause a glorious success, or we may fade into the dark recesses of time, a footnote in history. If our cause is just and we're following God's will, either outcome should be acceptable. We must proceed with the dedication and bravery of the men of the Alamo and the people of Magdala. That choice is ours. With the Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, that's all I have for you today. Stay tuned. I'm sure we'll have more developments for you on next week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.